This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Hope 103.2, joined right now by Jim Penman. Good morning to you, Jim.
Good morning.
Now, a lot of our listeners might hear the name Jim and not really know who you are, but they might have driven behind you on the side of the truck because you are the face for Jim's lawn mowing, among other things. Is that right?
That is correct. I'm actually, the single most common question my franchises get asked is there really a Jim? Well, there is.
And you're the Jim. Now, you don't just specialise in lawn mowing. What else does Jim cover?
We've currently got about 45 divisions. I lose track, but cleaning, antennas, dog wash, fencing, building maintenance, it goes on and on and on. We're just in the process of launching driving school, kitchens, energy. They're coming on fast.
Wow. And Jim, it's been around for a number of years now. It started in 1982, is that correct?
I started my full-time business in 1982. Actually, I've had a continuous gardening business since 1970, when I started doing it just after I left school and did it part-time all through my student years. But full-time from 1982, yeah.
Wow. And are you still wearing that classic bucket hat that we see on the side of each of those trucks?
No, actually, these days, if I'm out in the sun, I wear a broad-brimmed hat. The reason I used to wear the bucket hat is because when you're mowing lawns, you're always going under branches.
Yeah.
And the broad-brim hat gets knocked off. So I found that bucket hat useful. But I prefer the wider brim. It's very practical. That's exactly what I looked like mowing lawns. I had a beard and I had the bucket hat. And I started off the logo by putting my picture on the leaflet because I found I got a better response when I did that. Goodness knows why. I'm ugly as sin. But anyway, that's how it works.
Well, it really has turned into one of the most iconic logos that you see around Sydney these days. Is you'd know Jim's Lawn Mowing from that particular logo.
Yep, absolutely. It's one of Australia's best known logos, which is extraordinary, really, way beyond. When I first started franchising, somebody asked me what they thought I might achieve one day, and I said, if it really goes well, one day I could have 100 franchisees. Well, we're approaching 4,000. It's just incredible.
That's amazing. How did you go from a doctorate in history to landscaping?
Well, like I said, it was my part-time job, and my biggest problem is, I wasn't studying history as such. I was interested in a theory of society. I want to know why civilizations rise and fall. The big stuff, merging history with cross-cultural anthropology with zoology. Now, the problem with that really radical, way-out stuff is it doesn't get you an academic post, is what I intended. So in default of anything better, I turned to gardening to make a living.
That's incredible. And like you say, man, you were hoping to have 100. You end up with close to 4,000. What do you put down to the massive success of your business?
Service.
Yeah?
One word. I was successful with my customers because for all my many failings in business, I am obsessional about looking after my customers, giving them great service, turning up on time, making the job look immaculate. So I was very successful as a contractor, picked up work very easily, and started selling off lawn mowing rounds. And then I decided to franchise in 1989, to focus still on customers, but then I started focusing on franchisee service, on what can make my franchisees successful, what can make them happy. We have a very radical system in gyms, quite different to anything in the world. For example, we're the only franchising system in the world that allows franchisees to vote out their franchisors if they don't give them good service.
That's incredible. And I mean, decisions like that must be pretty audacious for the area that you're in. And I'm guessing along the way, going from a single sole business operator to franchisee, you must have had some bumps and hurdles along the way. What were some of the challenges, some of the biggest challenges you had to face?
Well, I've run out of money several times over the years. I've had periodic financial crises. Yes, just time after time. I'm the kind of person, if I've got $2 together piled up in the bank, I think, wow, now I can start spending. So I launch into something different. I have this obsessional drive. My wife says, I'm just a maniac. You just can't stop me. I just always got ideas.
Yeah.
So constant financial problems. But it's very difficult. You know, you're going from a one-man band to an organization which has got, nearly 4,000 people in it. You've got to learn different ways of doing things. Very hard to know how to take on staff, how to take on management, just the principles of how to run a business. And I've never had any training. I just learned from scratch, which means we do things in very unorthodox ways. And in the end, it's worked out quite well, but I've had some very, very tough learning curves.
Oh, fantastic. And what would you give as a piece of advice to any budding entrepreneur out there?
Look after the customers. And if you're a franchisor, that means primarily franchisees, but look after customers. Be obsessional about customers. Never be satisfied with giving good enough. Always, always, always try to do better. And I do that every day of my working life. I ask myself the same question. How can we give better service? And it's quite extraordinary how much of a market there is out there. I'll just give you one figure. In the past 12 months, during 2016, we knocked back more than 120,000 customers. The demand for our services is way beyond what we can cope with. There are many, many divisions, regions in gyms that cannot spend their advertising budget. They just have to give it back to the franchisees or do something else because the demand for our service is so good. And that is reputation. Everything is reputation.
So on that, you hear it all the time. Customer is king. But you must occasionally, over the course of the business, come up against just very difficult and challenging customers. How do you handle that moment with a guy who you just kind of scratch in your head and go, man, this guy, I've got to give him some extra grace here because he is a difficult person?
Well, I had one just yesterday. Let me give you an example. I got a last email yesterday. This customer was not happy with the work done on his car, which was paid for by somebody else. He was so difficult to deal with that the franchisee gave the complete payment for the job back to the person who paid for it. But get this, this person is still trying to get to come and do his job, even though we've given all the money back. And the reason he gave the money back is because he's impossible to deal with.
Yeah.
He still wants, even after the money's been returned, he still wants us to do a whole heap more work for nothing. I mean, that's an example. And this is the kind of guy that we just... There are some customers, we call them red lists. We'll actually have them on our system as do not give service to this customer. So if they've tried to ring up and try and book something, we say, sorry, we can't help you.
Right, okay. Now, you speak...
Not many like that, though, Duncan. Not many of that, mate. Most customers, most people are very, very reasonable. If you give them great service, they'll appreciate it. And they'll pay you, and they'll be great people. But there's a tiny minority, fraction of percent, which are actual horrors.
Right. Okay. Now, you're speaking at the up-and-coming Pathfinders event, mate. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you're going to be speaking on?
Well, I'll be talking about my story. But what's great about this is that I can actually tell the truth. I can actually talk about what's behind it. Now, what's behind gyms is my Christian values.
Yeah.
For example, I love what Jesus says about wealth. That's one of my guiding lights. One of the things he said was, it's harder for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven for a camel to go through the eye of a needle. And what that means is wealth is inherently corrupting.
Yeah.
So, for example, even though I am obviously pretty well off now, we try very hard to live an ordinary life in terms of normal consumption. And my kids come back from school and they complain. They say, all the other kids have got this and we haven't.
Mm.
But they just can't. They know at some level that we're wealthy, but we refuse to live like it. We refuse to live that kind of lifestyle. Instead, what we do is put our money into, in actual fact, my money goes into this research program related to my PhD, which is aimed to deal with problems like alcoholism and drug addiction.
Hmm. Man, does there come a moment, though, where you're just kind of driving down the street and you go by? I mean, I don't know what it is for you, but I know that I drive by like a car place and I see a really nice car and I think to myself, oh, man, if I had the cash, I would love to buy that. Do you ever have that moment where you're like, oh, I'm just going to treat myself and get something really fancy?
You know what the greatest luxury of having money is? I can buy any book I want. I love that. If I can just order it on Kindle, I have no hesitation. If I want to read a book, I read a book. And that's $10 maybe. And the other thing that's a luxury too is I can have all the fresh fruit that I want. So I can have berries, strawberries, blueberries, anything. So in that sense, yes, I do enjoy my wealth, but seriously, it doesn't cost a lot.
Yeah.
You live in a very simple lifestyle. And I think that I'm a great believer in the what people like Bill Gates have done in America, where I think when we earn money, it's a loan from God to use for his purposes. And it's expanding my business, making my business better and growing it. But when the wealth comes, it's to be used for something worthwhile. Because you know what they say about happiness? Money has very little to do with happiness.
Mm.
The first most important thing is relationships. Second thing is a sense of meaning and purpose in life. And the third is sense of community. And those are the things we need to be focusing on. Money is great. It can do great things, but it can also be very, very destructive.
Brilliant. Oh, thank you, Jim, for taking the time to talk to us today, mate. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Duncan.